Salutations everyone, this is ACTS, and this is the Mother's Day edition of the Weimar Technical Network. We're here every Sunday night at ACF, rain or shine, and another Sunday night, and I hope everyone out there with a father enjoys Father's Day, and I hope everyone else enjoys Father's Day as well. As always, I'd like to tell everyone the plan, the link, and all the kinds of fun stuff. If you would need to reach me, you can reach me on the radio, then email is a good place. If you have any questions for the mailbag, if you have any topics you'd like to hear discussed, if you have any puzzles you'd like to share with any of us, share with me, and I'll share it with the rest of the people. Or if you want me to tap all the rest of on the shoulder and to ask me to take a look at a NASA or a space-related a video or news item or such, comment on it. Email address to reach me is mailbag@acnews.com. Again, mailbag at my call sign, which is alphacharlie2golfsierra.com. I have a list of interesting articles, YouTube, that you might want to check out on my link page. The first few are things that either don't really go well with radio or a video thing, or they're space-related, and we'll get to them. The rest of them are articles I've read, I think, are of interest, so I offer them as a link, and if we have time to do the science talk segments, I'll select a few of those and talk about those as well. They're always up for discussion if anyone's interested. So that link page is roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. You can either go to Weimar's own website and find the link to the chat room, or you can type into the browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the chat room. We stream this on the internet, W2PL. I do it, try to do it 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So if you are outside of radio distance, so you don't have a radio on you, and you do have something that has a browser and an internet connection, then just type into the browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people, Mike, AC2NJI, has a great archive of that's going far back at September of 2006, so please avail yourself of that as well. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you what I have planned for you tonight. Okay, as always, I will ask people out there if they have any questions or topics for a discussion, and we'll take down their first name and their full sign, try and get to them in an orderly fashion. If we have more time, I'll open it up to any kind of general science questions. If you want to discuss any somewhat esoteric fields, I'll try my best. Or medicine, as long as it's not a specific case. I don't diagnose over radio. That will be available. Also, I do have a few little puzzles, a few little riddles to offer you when time allows. So I'll hopefully get to that. And if we have any extra time, there's always the articles that I have available in the Science Talk segment, if we have time for that. Then around 10:15 or so, we will have Paul come up and give us his basement report. That should take us a little bit to 11 o'clock. I'll come back. I'll try a little bowl around it, wish you all well, and call it a week. So that's my plan. If the repeater and my radio both are working the way they're supposed to, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. So with that in mind, I will drop and ask if anyone has any questions or topics tonight for the technical man.
JV2DX3.
Okay, DXC, what's your Phil, right?
Yeah, that's correct, Phil.
Okay, very good. Phil is recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight?
WA2 Victor David Henry John.
Hello, Charlie 2, Delta Alpha Lindsay, reporting the net.
So UDU supporting the net.
GV2VYY, Raymond.
No, Hi. Please give me your first name and call sign.
KT2RY, David.
David, recognize anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight?
Curtis
recognized, so thanks for checking in, Curtis. You doubled, I think, with someone else. So, the person who doubled with Curtis, try again. Okay, Hank recognized. Anyone else with any questions or comments for tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign.
It's Raymond, and it's KD2BYY.
Okay, Raymond, yeah, I put you up on the list already. I have Phil, I have John, I have Raymond, I have David, and I have Hank. So if there's anyone else out there who would like to have their name on the list for tonight's set, please give me your first name. It's all time.
KD2UDU, reporting the net.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wayne. Anyone else out there with any questions or comments or topics of discussion for the technical net that would like to be put on our little list for tonight? So give me your first name and your call sign.
Just a suggestion. I think it's two video links. I know we discussed it before, but very interesting video of the lady, ham radio operator, that explained magnetic antenna and the voltage around the loop and the current network field.
Okay, Wes, we'll put your name on the list, and I've seen them. I actually even emailed you a response to it, but we can discuss it as well. Anyone else out there who want to put their name on the list before we go ahead and go down the actual list? So if you have any questions or topics that you'd like to discuss tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign.
No, you don't have to put me on the list, just easy subject. If you don't mind to mention about it, it's interesting. Interesting.
Okay, well, we'll see what we do. I mean, usually it's probably best if we do have a discussion about it. So, unless you're busy later on during the technical mess, I'll ask you if you want to talk about it. If not, I'll say a couple words about it. That's okay. But I just want to keep the order of the list that I'm making up here tonight.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to try to be there.
Okay. If anyone else has any questions or topics for discussion, I'll give one more chance to have your name on the list. If we have time later on, I'll be asking again anyway, so that, you know, you're not going to be shut out of this. So, once again, before we go on to the actual list, anyone else want to be added to it with any questions or topics, please give me your first name and your call sign.
This is KD2WIW. I'm not sure if you guys can hear me. If you can you restate my call sign? KD2WIW. My name is Charlie.
Yes, Charlie, KD2WIW. I hear you fine. You're full quieting.
Copy that. Thank you.
Do you have any question or topic for tonight, or you just wanted to make sure that you could reach the repeater?
I just wanted to make sure I was on the list. I said my call sign before, but I don't think anyone heard it, so I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, I didn't hear it prior to this. You might have been the person that was doubling with another person, so that's possible. Okay, let's start the list. As I said before, most likely we'll have time to cover other questions if other people have them later on. Bill, maybe to DXC, what's your question or your topic for tonight?
Phil, KD2BXC. Just to follow up from last discussion regarding my issue with in-set long wire antenna. Ring a bell?
Yes, indeed. I thankfully remember most of what I talked about the week before. We talked about the possibility that the ballon might be causing the problems, and you had already removed the transmission line from the equation by hooking up a dummy load. And there's very little that a single continuous piece of wire can do other than just conduct. So, yes, I recall.
Okay, so just to recap for others as well, in the past 2 years, I've been using in-fit one-wire antenna manufactured by my antennas, and getting reasonable FWR readings and all that, not perfect. And then suddenly, off the scale FWR. So I had my due diligence and take everything apart basically and see where the fault could be. Radio wasn't holding that power. Let it drop in. So after discussion last week on the TechNet, we figured a good possibility is that maybe my 9-to-1 balance went south on that could happen. So what I did was I swapped out that balance and put a Palomar 9-to-1 balance. Set everything up using the coax and the wire that came with my antenna. And once again, I got really, really high, outrageously off the scale of FWR. Crazy kind of thing. One thing I did today that I didn't do originally was with my own PG tuner, not meant for outdoors, and put it up on the roof, put it in line, and came back down to the shack, and lo and behold, I'm getting practically 1-to-1 across all the land. So I don't know if I'm being deceived or something has changed, so let me just open it up.
Okay, given your description of what's going on, the only thing that has really changed is the transmission line. There's something wonky apparently with the transmission line that's not playing nice. The way you describe it, I assume you're using the same transmission wire. It's just instead of it being connected from the ballon to your antenna line, ballon to your antenna tuner, it's connected from your antenna tuner to your radio, right?
Before and after, I think twice to choke the system. Down to the shack, heat up, and I'm seeing everything chunky dark. I don't know if I'm covering up the problem by putting up antenna on the roof. The project I resolved to in the near future anyway. Same transmission line, and everything once again checking out of it. Let's drop for a second. And I'll put a dummy load at the top, just to get the shaft, reverse, and you might be doing it. I just don't know what changed last week. Kind of wire stretch, wire contract, things open up, water in connection, nice ace, nice ace, everything. I don't know what changed. Maybe it's the SD.
Okay, very good, Phil. I will open it up to the rest of the people out there for their opinion. I was just trying to make sure that you're using the exact same transmission wire. It's not that you now have a parallel situation where you brought a new set of transmission wires connected to your antenna tuner, and then put a little sub connection from the balance above to the antenna tuner. So it's the same transmission line in both cases. It's just they're connected to different things. You split up the antenna tuner from the base of operations, UDH, to the antenna piece, right?
That's correct. The only thing that's changed my setup was that I replaced the balance with a new one. Battery operated to take it to the observe my SWR meter back down in the shack. That was very surprising to see that I'm seeing full power output, almost a perfect match. Oddly, previously to my music that, the radio was never even fully, you know, folding back at all because it was such a high SWR. I don't know, I'm looking at smoke and mirrors here, and everything comes to our reach. That connects.
Okay, so you're thinking that maybe these high standing wave ratio numbers are just phantoms, if you will, that they're not real, there's something else going terribly wrong. Let me just ask you another little question. Did you check a whole bunch of different bands, or did you principally check one band and it was totally unable to tune before and now perfectly able to tune?
I tried 20 meters, 15 meters, 10 meters. I went down seven megahertz lower and been all over the place. Could I do that? You know, things changed. Oddly, I think it was 21 megahertz that I had perfect match, and it's never been visiting to that frequency anyway prior to that. So, you know, I'm just bouncing around. It's not just based on one side, one frequency.
Okay, very good. So you swapped out the balun, although when you first swapped out the balun and didn't change anything else, you still had the very high standing wave ratio mismatch problems, and your antenna tuner couldn't get it tuned. You then basically electronically split up the antenna tuner rather than at your base station to your antenna feed, and now you're able to tune a bunch of things. The best guess that I have for this situation, because it sounds like obviously the end set is working, it sounds like the balance is working, and it sounds like the transmission line is working. There's a curious phenomena with transmission lines. There's a whole bunch of things that every so often guys will talk about on the HF band, that you have to cut your transmission line to a certain length in order for it to be the most effective. If you're operating at an impedance match of 50 ohms, the antenna feed line is giving you 50 ohms of resonance, that's not true. But if you're starting from a non-resonance and your impedance is other than 50 ohms, the length of your coax will determine characteristics of your impedance at the other end of the transmission line. The total impedance will pretty much stay the same, but the phase relationship and such change. And the phase relationship is very important to how antenna tuners, which are impedance matching circuits, do their thing. There are times where the same impedance with a different phase relationship cannot tune on an antenna tuner. I once had a situation where I had 10 meters. My antenna tuner would not tune. I took a jumper cable for about 2 feet, and included that in the transmission length, and it rotated the phase angle, and the antenna tuner was blissfully able to correct for it to give me a one-to-one zoom. So I'm thinking that maybe there's something going on purely with the length of the transmission line. That your system is out of impedance in such a way that your antenna tuner wasn't quite able to correct for it until you change the distance of your transmission line to the antenna tuner.
Good enough. Until you what?
What'd you say, Wesley?
You got me lost at the last sentence. Until what? Until you change the distance to the antenna tuner from your transmission line?
Yeah. If you change the length of the transmission line from the antenna feed point to the antenna tuner, rotate the phase angle and you change its ability to correct for some impedances. Dick used to talk about this a lot, that he would have loved to have a Smith chart of the correction areas of impedance with each given antenna tuner, because they're different for different types of tuners. There's L tuners, there's T tuners, there's pi tuners, and depending upon the component value for the device, it also changes those areas of impedance that it can transform from its presence to a 50 ohm impedance that you want.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you for that. So, in other words, you have 5 inches. Between your transmitter and antenna tuner. Is that what you're talking about? Or you're talking about antenna that is 50 feet away and the output of the antenna tuner? That's what I'm lost with.
It's the distance between the antenna feed point and the input to the antenna tuner that's then going to go into the output of your transmitter to feed the antenna. That distance is very sensitive to length when your antenna is not resonant and is not giving a true 50 ohm impedance, and you're correcting it with the antenna tuner. But the distance between the feed point and the antenna tuner is going to cause the impedance to sort of rotate through a bunch of values that are different, and that given antenna tuner's impedance transformation circuit will either be able to deal with or not.
Yeah, but here is a weak logical point. There is no antenna in the whole world that is resonant. Because when you have a bandwidth from 3.5 to 3.8, and your antenna, no matter how good the antenna is covering that part, it's still not equal to it. So you might be in resonant point, but not necessarily. Or let's say there is a very, very sharp tuning for the antenna. Then you're momentarily out of it. Does it apply?
Well, some antennas have a better bandwidth than others. This is usually, most antennas have an area where they're resonant and you do not have to apply the antenna tuner to that frequency. Given that us amateurs want to work many bands, and so we go off resonance all the time and rely on impedance transformation antenna tuners to get us the rest of the way, very often, yeah, it's not a 50 ohm. But I'm saying, in a perfect situation, which is theoretically possible, you have a nice broad dipole and you're operating in a narrow bandwidth, you're principally very close to 50 ohms of impedance, and there's no transformation of the impedance down the transmission line. You go off your resonant frequency, yes, you get the same problem. It becomes more severe the more the mismatch there is. But the thing that I find that people don't really appreciate is the difference that a very short length of jumper cable makes in a given antenna tuner either being able to make that impedance match or not make it. And I have a practical experience of 2 feet of cable made the difference for my 10-meter setup at once upon a time. Just to give you an idea that it's a real thing, it's not a theoretical thing.
Yes, I agree 100%. Thank you very much.
Okay, so Phil, any opinions about this? I mean, I'll open it up to the rest of the gang here and see if they have any thoughts on the subject, but just by a matter of eliminating everything else, the only thing I'm sort of stuck with is this possibility that, you know, you might have actually been able to tune if you use the jumper cable to change the distance of your transmission line, even not putting it directly up to the B-point, just introducing an additional, I don't know, 5 feet of coax as a jumper might have changed the ability of the antenna tuner.
I understand that. Well, if I were to want to make correction, well, would the same thing have happened if I added that 5 feet in the shack? Or does it not make a difference whether or not I use the top side or here in the shack?
No, it shouldn't make any difference as long as it's before it reaches the antenna tuner, because the change of the impedance phase is going to affect the ability of the antenna tuner itself to change, to transform the impedance back into a nominal 50 ohms.
K2GJE.
Yes, Ed.
Good evening, this is K2GJE. Just a thought on my part. Of course, that Ed said piece of wire has a fantastic SWR that he's trying to match with a Balun. And when he put the antenna tuner on the roof, evidently he did get a good match to the coax. And that was proof with the SWR meter in the shack. When the tuner was in the shack, he had problems. So it shows that for some reason, the coax was very on the SWR. Even with that Balun topside, the SWR still probably was horrific. And that's why he needed the tuner to... I think possibly maybe he could change the point of match with the 5 feet of coax, over.
Okay, so it sounds like you're agreeing with me.
Certainly would try it. If the 5 foot of coax does not do it, then I have some suspicion what's happening with that coax. Why was that coax so happy with the antenna tuner topside, which the output of the tuner gave a very good match to his receiver, but it was very unhappy when the tuner was downstairs, over.
Okay, Ed, so what are your theories? I mean, the only thing that I can come up that makes any kind of consistent sense, and you know, it's not a typical presentation, but that there are certain lengths of transmission line that might just coincidentally offer a given design antenna tuner nothing to play with. And so that's all that I kind of have. So if you have other location of a antenna tuner in a given length of transmission line would have such a dramatic effect each year.
My only opinion is that coax is very unhappy with high SWR. I don't know what's happening there. It could even have an arc over. I would try 5 feet. That's easy enough to do. And then I would try a new coax run to the roof The best way would have been open wire line, but people don't like that and they have problem bringing it into the house. But if 5 feet doesn't do it, I would scrap the coax over.
82 AMZ with a comment?
Yes, Mike.
Okay, first off, I didn't hear everything. I had seen with gentlemen having SWR issues with his antenna. First thing, does the gentleman have an antenna analyzer? And what does your antenna analyzer say?
Well, the antenna itself, off scale. I've had terminated my transmission line with dummy load. Perfect. Everything for contamination.
Again, sir, I'm trying to understand you. You got a transmitter. It goes to a transmatch tuner. From the tuner, it goes to your antenna. It's the normal everyday setup. Is that correct?
Regular, normal, everyday setup. I've got it. Once again, long wire, end fed, like an LVG tuner. Here in the shack, running LMR, about 2 years old, maybe not even just run of LMR 400, that's about 75 feet going up. Yes, long time. And suddenly, after 2 years of being relatively happy, the antenna decided to show some very erratic, off scale SWR. Thank you, sir.
Okay, take your antenna analyzer. First, you test it against the known dummy load. Then you take your antenna analyzer right to your antenna. Have you done that? Right to where, right to your ballon or whatever you're using.
Oh yeah, I've done that. It's not resonant anywhere where I need to be. I actually haven't too much of a tip because I don't want it to be. It's wildly lost the scale.
Combination of a couple of things. Your antenna and your ballon could be shot. So you really got to take it apart one piece by piece. To me, sounds like you got like your ballon or whatever you're using is flaky. Could have had water in it. You're using cable that's 2 years old. That's also suspect. Replace your cable, replace your ballon, give it a shot. Sounds like you got multiple issues going on at the same time, sir.
It is a brand new balance, replacing the balance of the bus for 2 years. So I've had an issue now, two balances.
Have you tested the ballon on your bench with the dummy load and your analyzer?
Not that on the roof. I'm very comfortable on a day like today, but I did that on the roof. I'd rather had it on the bench, but I was expecting better results, so I did my installation.
I would suggest, sir, KD2MZ, that you take your ballon off the roof, you put it on a bench, you get a known working dummy load, which you verify with your analyzer to prove that it's linear across the band that you're interested in. Then check your ballon on the bench, and because your long wire is a piece of wire. And then you might want to then check your coax. And if your coax is 2 years old, now you're starting to push it. A little bit of water can get in there and can wreak havoc on you.
I just don't want to replace the 75-foot nut of LMR 400 just after 2 years. But I understand all the diagnostics. I have separated the system so many different parts. Actually, today was supposed to have been nothing more than a half-hour project. 5 hours later, I was walking through the country. So it's kind of frustrating. And, you know, I don't know if actually putting a tuner, a remote tuner on the roof, just hiding an issue that's going to cause some problems.
I would still suggest you check your components individually. And if you got to replace 75 feet, you got to do it. 82 AMZ. Good luck. I hope you find a problem.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. So basically, the gist of me and Ed are that there's something weird going on in relation to the transmission line. And I understand that, you know, 75 feet of LMR is about, you know, $80. And it should certainly last more than 2 years. Hopefully, weatherproof the ends of the UHF connectors. UHF connectors are not inherently weatherproof. End connectors are, but the UHF aren't. I would try if you have any kind of spare jumpers in the shack, try a couple of different length jumpers, see if that makes any difference. If it seems to magically make a difference, then it's just a lot of bad luck that your length of transmission line is rotating your impedance in a way that your antenna tuner just can't reach it. If the jumpers don't improve anything, unless you're planning to get yourself a real weatherproof external antenna tuner, you might have to try another transmission line. But if you're getting a good match with the transmission line hooked up to the other end of the antenna tuner, I see no particular reason to be terribly worried about what's going on. You know, unless it's, as Ed sort of mentioned, that there's something about a high vis law, there's something in the transmission line that's not quite kosher. If you had an antenna analyzer that had a time domain reflectometer, you could better figure out the shape of the transmission line. It may be capable of demonstrating a 50 ohm gummy load impedance, but it might have some discontinuities as far as internal impedance that a TDR would be able to detect. I gather that your antenna analyzer doesn't include a TDR feature, though.
Well, the one I wish you...
An MFJ analyzer got to have a feature. It doesn't have a lot of other features. I do have a big expert analyzer, which I haven't used much, so my knowledge is not reaching to give me. I don't know. I've got some homework to do. I'm up for the challenge. I just wish it was a cooler day, being up on a roof of state. So I'm home to play the game on foot, and I know I don't want to take up any more time than that. I know other people have questions. Thank you for your time, and if I can get back on next weekend, if I have anything going on between now and then, it's a good result, I'll let you know. KB2GSV, get back to that.
KB2GS, thanks, Phil. I, if you have a rig expert, I have a rig expert AA600. It does have a TDR function. The user interface is rather friendly. So if I was you, and you could do that experiment in your shaft, just disconnect the transmission line from your internal antenna tuner, because I assume you brought it back into the shaft, and just set your rig expert for LMR 400 velocity factor, and it should give you a nice indication of whether there are any impedance irregularities that might kind of put a bright light on the entire subject.
Quick comment.
Yes, Ed.
Yeah, this is WA2VDH. Quick comment. Just check the, or look carefully at those end connectors, those UHF connectors, because I have had the out of braid solder connection open up at times, you know, where those little holes you have to solder through to solder to the braid. The fact that it was a sudden change, sometimes those solder connections go hokey.
Okay, that's an interesting idea. The problem, though, is when he moved the antenna tuner, it seemed to disappear, so it would be a curious failure that could reverse itself. But yeah, it's always good to check your connection.
Yeah, well, if, as he flexed the cable, if, you know, it might have been an erratic connection making it break.
Okay, that's a possibility. So keep that in mind, Phil, as well. And I look forward to next Sunday night, and I hope you are able to give us good news.
Thank you once again, Roy, and everybody else that put what we make, and all those locations, places that have their questions.
Thanks again.
Also, happy fall to the table. Those falls are done. TV2GXB, listening out.
Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, I found some article. It took you about the wind transmission line is long or short. If it's shorter than 1/4 wave, and if it's longer than 1/4 wave, it's from electrical engineering. But so let's say 3 meter electrically very short, 3 meter, let's say our transmission line is electrically very short for the frequency of 30 kilohertz, but it's very long for frequency 30 megahertz. But the point is that, let me drop. That if we're talking about 50 ohm load, the phase difference doesn't make any difference, so it does.
The phase of the actual impedance of the non-resonant radiating antenna makes a dramatic difference. 50 ohms is 50 ohms, but what your antenna tuner is being pulled upon to convert to 50 ohms makes a significant difference.
Oh, definitely. I agree with that. Yeah, the only when you have a dummy load, it doesn't make any difference at all, no matter how long or how short it is the transmission.
Yes, I agree with you entirely. That is kind of giving you a demo of what it would be like in a perfectly resonant system, a dummy load with a 50 ohms of real impedance. It is a model for a resonant circuit in the way it's designed these days. So yeah, the length of the transmission line, it has no effect on a dummy load. It does as soon as you steer off 50 ohms of speed. That's where the curiosity is.
When you put on the end of the coaxial cable short, open, and 50 ohms, and then you calibrate it, and then you manage to take it. Here, where I'm lost, yes, I see all of the characteristics on my skin, how they know where I am and this and with the antenna. But practically, what I'm doing is when I connect the antenna, The cable, the coaxial cable, is not existing. It doesn't exist. My VNA cannot see it. It disconnects the antenna because I already calibrated it. So how am I going to know if it's too short, if it's too low?
This isn't the problem with a VNA. This is a problem with an antenna tuner. You can't zero out an antenna tuner. The only way you can zero out an antenna tuner is if you put an antenna tuner in front of your antenna tuner. So it's a different thing entirely. You're calibrating a vector network analyzer to get the coax cable and the phase shift out of the equation. You can't do it with an antenna tuner.
Okay, and here's a question. Yeah, I'm sorry, I have a weakness in my education. I eliminated the transmission line. I don't see it. I see the antenna. Okay, fine. Now, I put the antenna. I see the antenna. I can know everything about the antenna on my VNA. But then, if I want to know if my transmission line is too long and too short, what am I doing?
David.
This is a very interesting discussion. I was on 20 meters maybe 3 weeks ago. I had a SWR 1.7 to 1. My radio can't operate above 1.5 to 1. So what I did was I removed some devices from the line and also took the choke off and put an Amphenol barrel connector with a ferrite bead. And then I changed all the jumper cables from thin like RG58 to like RG213, 4 foot RG213 cables, and the SWR went down to 1.1 to 1 on 20 meters, and it was screaming. You know, even like if you're using thin cables and you change them to fatter cables, this can also make a big difference. Go ahead.
I would tend to disagree as far as impedance. As far as I know, the thickness or thinness of a coaxial cable will have a major effect in its power handling capability. Its design, if it, there are other problems other than it being thin. If the shield is very, very loose and not fully covering up, it can have effects on the impedance. I think that primarily the difference that caused your change of standing wave ratio is probably more related with the total length of the transmission line, both before and after. That most likely all of your jumpers weren't identical length, so that the total length and thus the phase rotation of the signal when it got to your radio and or your antenna tuner was different enough to have that effect.
Do you think that the original jumpers that were connected were cheap, and also they had connectors that weren't working 100%? Because, you know, things can go wrong over time, you know? I put these brand new, fat, 4 foot jumper cables in there. Brand new, you know, the connectors are really good quality, you know. Instead of using just any barrel connector, I got the best one I could find, you know, for the money. And, you know, the result is, I guess the result speaks for itself.
Okay, I mean, it might be what went on. It's difficult because you changed a lot of variables with one experiment. So it's impossible to really fundamentally say it was this that did it as opposed to that, as opposed to the other thing. There's another misconception out there. A lot of people don't like UHF connectors for a bunch of reasons. One that's somewhat legitimate is, as I mentioned earlier, they're not weatherproof. The end connectors are much better weatherproof. So if you're using UHF outside, it's always a good idea to build up good habits of weatherproofing it. I've heard and seen all kinds of different ways that people have put silicone tape and then covered that with electrical tape, and I've seen people spray beyond that an enamel coat over it. There's a lot of different ways. The other problem that people don't like about UHF is they're not actually 50 ohms of impedance. They're slightly non-50 ohms. But I've seen YouTube where people have stuffed 10 or 12 or 15 UHF connectors back to back and tested the wattage that went out and tested the standing wave ratio, and they had no effect whatsoever on either the standing wave ratio or on the total watt output because there wasn't that much loss between all those connections. So again, I don't know exactly why you had one-to-one after you tried that experiment, but my gut sensibility is that the most important factor was probably the total length of your antenna transmission line.
QSL. But that was like three and a half weeks ago, and now, you know, it's still one-to-one.
so I don't complain for that, you know. And, you know, so many times I try to change things and move things around to improve the performance of the radio. And, you know, from what I can tell, what I did 3.5 weeks ago was the same. I got it to work. Also, I did very carefully weatherproof the feed point of my fan dipole. I used 3M, the black tape, waterproof black tape. I covered it up, and then I took the silicone. The silicone is like a stretch. You stretch it on so it stays really tight around the connector and the feed point, and then
you know, it's always good, in my mind, to take a belt and suspenders kind of look to things. So, the more the merrier. I've read numerous articles. Usually, the way that people describe it is they put the silicone first because that'll fuse together, but it's very easy to unwrap it, so in order to keep it stable, that's where they tend to put the waterproof electrical tape over that. And then there are lots of other things that you can steer over that. But belt suspenders is always a good idea.
QSL, Roy. Yeah, the they call it acrylic. Is it acrylic? It's like a semi-clear tape, which is covered two sides with plastic. You pull one side off, pull the other side off, and then you stretch it over the place where you want to weatherproof. So it works. It works pretty good. And I put two layers of that on my feed point. So, you know, so far it seems to work pretty good. When it rains, you know, the SWR is hardly affected. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's called silicone self-sealing tape. 3M makes it. A lot of companies make it. The trick that you got to teach people when they use it is you have to stretch it. Sometimes people don't really understand that, but if you don't stretch it, it doesn't really fully activate. So you pull it with a little bit of attention. It stretches usually to about twice the length, and then you wrap it around, and it will fuse together and waterproof to a degree. It's not good for abrasion. If you don't protect it with something else on top of it, if it rubs up against something, it'll tear and fall apart. So that's why the electrical tape or something else needs to be put over it once you use the silicone sealing tape.
USL. Yeah. Well, mine is kind of brown and bumpy from the weather. Nothing has come off of it. And, you know, to put a layer of electrical tape, waterproof, and two layers of acrylic seems to work okay. So that's how I did it anyway, KG2R1.
Okay, very good. I'm glad it's working for you. I hope people here consider it in their use. Certainly, people need to apply proper weatherproofing to UHF connections that outside. Bill, you wanted to say something?
Yes. In regards to water inside connections, is there much of an impact on HF frequencies as opposed to VHF? I know VHF and UHF are quite important, being absorbed by water. How about HF?
Yeah, water getting into your coax is a major pain in the backside. It also is somewhat important what type of coaxial cable that you use. It's less of a problem in LMR because that's closed cell foam, so it won't really drench things too much. What happens is, though, that the cover, you know, the black cover of the coax is not fully insulated. It will slowly leak fluids into it and get somewhat into the closed cell. There are other coaxial cable designs that, rather than use a closed cell insulating area, will use a polyethylene coil that goes around and acts as a spacer. You could have loads of water deposited inside the coax. I've heard people talk about how, you know, they had problems with their coax, they unscrewed it, and all of a sudden water gushed out of it. So that's going to impact the transmissions a great deal.
Okay, I just wondered whether that is, you know, as far as,
well, and I know Dick Nadel has talked a lot about this subject of cables and connectors and getting water, waterproofing. I've tried everything as far as waterproofing, do a pretty decent job, but still can't fight the moisture and humidity that condensation can end up inside the coax connector. I understand that it's more critical than VHF and UHF than it is HF, but I understand the integration of the coax.
So how do you handle with your antenna master, whatever you have, the phase relation?
Wesley, are you talking to me? Are you talking to Bill? I'm not quite sure. I don't know what an antenna master is.
You said, I heard, you said that you have an antenna analyzer with your antenna master or something like that. I'm asking, what is your, how do you handle the your coaxial link versus the phase?
Well, thankfully, I got myself a much better designed antenna tuner that has a much wider range. I'm using Talstar antenna tuners, and I kind of joke that I can tune a doorknob if I have to. Otherwise, if I find a problem, I just go looking for a 4 or 5 foot length of jumper cable. I have loads of them, and I put it in line and see if it makes any difference in the tuner's ability to tune. I don't go through the trouble of using a vector network analyzer because I don't have any hard and fast indications of where in the in the Smith chart any of my antenna tuners are capable of tuning. No one publishes that information, and, you know, like, I don't have the time to kind of generate my own laboratory data on the subject.
Did you see a significant difference when you put that 2 feet extension to the spectrum tip?
Yes, it made the difference between my old MFJ antenna tuner tuning or just giving up on it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks everyone for participating. Thanks to Bill for bringing up the subject. Next on my list is John, WA2BDH. Question or topic tonight, John?
Okay, fine business. Yeah, just take good evening to everybody on the net. Yeah, my question has to do with the new FCC rules about RF exposure, particularly what paperwork do we have to file. I heard something about it. I'm not sure of the details, but I know there are some new rules, and that some cases they have to file some paperwork or make some measurements. I wonder if anybody knows anything about it and what the details are.
Yes, John. The FCC changed its ruling. The guidelines for RF exposure have not really changed since the 1990s. But what happened was they kind of let us get out of jail. They decided last year to change that, and last month it went into effect. What it amounts to is sometime before 2 years from now, you have to go to someplace and look up an equation. You have to insert measured your the gain of your antenna, the power output of your transmitter, and the distance of the closest human being. And I guess print it out.